that happened today, the concerns about tomorrow, let all of that go. And just relax and open the heart and start to try to feel Jesus' presence. Because God's in many forms, that's the form that Padre Pio was always channeling. So we'll just sit for a few minutes. Om peace. Amen. So tonight we're going to talk about Padre Pio. And, you know, as you prepare for something like this, I spent a lot of time, I read a nice thick book on Padre Pio and did a little bit of other research. And it's great fun. The last one I did in this series was on Ma, Anandamoyi Ma. And I have to say, Ma is family. Master said Ma was family. Padre Pio was very other. So it was very interesting. I had some interesting insights and experiences studying Padre Pio because there was a lot of it that I kind of couldn't relate to. Because it's so other than our own path. And that, I don't want to use the word, but I'll say it sort of forced my mind into some channels that it hasn't usually gone. And I had some interesting insights, I think, about our path that I would like to share over the course of the evening. But I'll start a little bit with kind of the factual part, just so we have some context. So this will be a little bit of a combination of kind of a travelogue. These things happen, these dates and all of that. And then also, I do want to share as how this relates to our path. And I'll say, I don't have a big canned thing that I want to present tonight. So this is us exploring the life of a great saint and exploring that saint in light of how it can inform us as how to get closer to Master. That's what we're doing here. I don't want to just share a lot of details about this guy. Okay, we're here to find God. So the reason I'm saying that is as we go through the course of the evening, if anything occurs to you, or there's a question about something, or hey, what about, put your hand up. You can't interrupt me because you're the reason we're here. Okay, so we're all doing this together. Okay. But Padre Pio was born in 1887, died in 1968. And that in itself, for me, was very interesting because most of the saints that we're familiar with, most of them, not all, of course, most of the saints are a long time ago. I mean, St. Francis, St. Anthony, St. Augustine, the apostles, all of that. It's a very long time ago. I had the great blessing a few years ago. The UN actually called me and Karen and asked us if we'd be willing. It was a hilarious conversation. Are you willing to travel? Yes. Would you be willing to go to someplace that's a little far? Yes. Would you be willing to go to Italy? It's like, okay, I'll go. All right, so that was great. And as it turned out, we wound up training the IT department for the United Nations, and they're in southern Italy, right between Brindisi, which is where they were, and Assisi, is San Giovanni Rotondo, which was Padre Pio's place. I'd never been there before. So we went, you know, we were on the way down, we took an extra day, we stayed there. We spent a day in Padre Pio's presence. And again, it was very interesting because, you know, I lived in Italy. I've been to Italy a zillion times, and I've been to all of these shrines, and I saw St. Anthony's tongue and, you know, all the various body parts that they sprinkle around the country. It's quite the tradition. By the way, I have to tell you, you know the song, I Left My Heart in San Francisco? Padre Pio's heart was in Boston last week. No, I am not kidding. It is the first major relic of Padre Pio that's ever been out of Italy. So Padre Pio's heart was in Boston. I don't know what to do with that exactly, but I thought I would share. Yes? I was afraid to look. I actually don't know. I mean, I did see St. Anthony's tongue, and it was just this little thing that looked like a tongue. But I don't know what his heart looked like actually, but I was really struck to see it was in Boston. Isn't that interesting? It's a little weird with the Italians are really into this stuff. They would cut the saint up. I mean, they would bury him, but different parts would get snatched, and then the different cities would go to war and fight for, like, the foot. And there'd be this big war between, like, Perugia and Assisi over St. Francis's foot. What can I tell you? Well, I don't know if they fought over the heart, but anyway, I mean, I didn't mean that to be the major topic for tonight. I just sort of wanted to mention it. So no more hard questions. Okay, I mean, you know, he was very heart-centered, so maybe this is special, but nonetheless, that was just a little interesting aside. Okay. So as often happens, he was part of the Capuchin order. The Capuchin order is an order of St. Francis, and as always happens, Swami said it always happens, you have a great saint who starts a tradition of some sort. And what happens over time is the followers drift. And, you know, sorry to say, Swami said that's going to happen with Ananda too. I mean, it's the nature of the material plane. Until you get to Satyayuga, there is this war going on in each of us, the Pandavas and the Kauravas. There's this war going on in each of us. We're on this planet, and it's very difficult for us to really understand that this stuff doesn't matter. It's about this. So you start making up these rules and all this stuff, and you kind of lose the heart a little bit. That always happens. And it happened with St. Francis's work. It's happened in spades with Jesus's work. You remember the joke, right? You know, he was crucified only once, but his teachings are crucified every Sunday. That's just sort of how it works. Okay, so the Capuchin order arose, and I forget the fellow's name, but you know, there are a zillion Italian names. It doesn't matter. A great saint started the Capuchin order, and what it was intended to do was to go back to the original spirit of St. Francis. And all religions need to do this periodically. You know, the Reformation and the Catholic Church, all the religions. The Hasidic movement in Judaism was the same thing. The Jews had gotten so into book learning, they were so into book learning that they'd lost the heart and the spirit. So the Hasids arose and said, God is joy. Books are important, but so that's why the Capuchins rose. Now, the original monk who started this always wore the hood, and that's why a cappuccino is called a cappuccino, because he wore this little brown hood, and when you order a cappuccino, it's got this little foam cap, and they thought they sort of look the same. So it's called a cappuccino. Cappuccio in Italian means hood. So next time you drink a cappuccino, you're closer to St. Francis, to Padre Pio than you think. Okay? So that saint, the Capuchin order was created in 1520. St. Francis was alive from about 1180 to 1220. So about 300 years later, the Capuchin order arose. Now, I found this a little interesting. There are two different things. One is a monk, if you've ever heard the word, and I've never known the distinction before, it's a little interesting. One is a monk and one is a mendicant. And I never really got what that meant. A monk is in one place, does ministry, prayer, and solitude, very reclusive, is in one place, has no individual property, but the monastery owns property. So what happened was a lot of the monks, you know, I mean, they're staying in these 4-star hotels, essentially, which is what the monastery had become. They didn't own it, so they were still in poverty, but they're staying in places that were pretty nice, okay? A mendicant was a more strict follower of St. Francis. They moved around, so they weren't in one monastery, and Padre Pio moved around quite a bit. He wound up in San Giovanni Rotondo, but he was in a lot of different places. They do societal service. The monks are secluded. Okay, so the mendicants. And it's total poverty. Nobody owns anything. I mean, it's very strict that way. So technically speaking, Padre Pio was not a monk. He was a mendicant. But people used to call him a monk all the time, and he never corrected anyone. It's not important. But for us on this path, I thought the distinction was a little bit interesting. So the mendicants were a little bit more serious, in a sense, in that way. A lot of the monasteries had drifted and gotten really almost a little corrupt. I mean, unfortunately, the Capuchin order did too, but as I said, the material plane always tends towards dissolution. There's not much you can do about it. He was born Francesco Forgione. When he was 14, and you know, I mean, my opinion, to some extent, I always think it's adorable. Like in the autobiography, Master kind of makes it sound like when he was born, he was just a kid. He was just some kid, and then later he did a lot of spiritual work and became an avatar. It doesn't really work that way. I mean, he was born a great soul. And all the saints that he met through the autobiography, you know, when you're reading that, all the saints he met, they were all asking him spiritual questions when he was a kid. So, okay. At 14 years old, Francesco Forgione, who later became Fra Pio, brother, and then when he took his ordination, Padre Pio. That's sort of how that works. When he was 14, he took a pilgrimage without asking. He just left home and took a pilgrimage. His father scolded him when he got home. He said, hey, you're 14, you can't do that. And he said, Father, forgive me, you are right 1,000 times. But you should think about next year when, God willing, I shall abandon this life forever to embrace a better one. A little cheeky for a 14-year-old, but so it proved to be. There were a lot of miracles in Padre Pio's life. And on to some extent, you know, this is one of the things that was interesting for me, because our path, as Swami has said, our path is very non-phenomenal. I mean, there were miracles in the AY, but Swami, at least, didn't have all these things happen. You know, some people, they have visions and all of this sort of stuff. Master referred to those, they're not bad, but he referred to those as the bells and whistles on the spiritual path. They're perfectly fine, and on some level they can give us a little confidence that there's another reality that we're not seeing clearly, and that's all great, but don't get distracted, because we have work to do, and our work is to find God. We can get so excited about these things that happen. So our path tends to be very non-phenomenal. Padre Pio was the opposite. He had loopy things happening to him all the time. Visions and bilocating and miracles and all of this stuff, and I'll touch on a few. But again, I didn't want this to turn into a travelogue of all these little stories of miracles, because at the end of the evening, if that's all we do, we'll go home and say, wow, that was neat, and we'll still be us. So I'm hoping to get deeper in that way, but I will share a few of these. At one point when he was very young, he was walking through a field with some friends, and he said, don't you hear the chorus of angels? Don't you hear the church bells ringing? And they said, no. And they were in a particular location, a particular spot. Many years later, a Capuchin church and friary was built on that exact spot. And it had nothing to do because he said that. It was there, and he just heard it before it was happening. He went through an enormous amount of persecution, and that's one of the things I want to talk about tonight. You know, let's just sort of touch on that now, because this was very interesting to me. When you're ordained, it's a big deal. When you go from being one of the brothers, Fra Pio, Pio just means pious, it's pious in Italian, so brother pious, going from Fra Pio to Padre Pio, becoming a father, becoming a minister, is a big deal. So there's a big ordination ceremony, and very often a card is handed out, a memento, sort of, to the people who come. His memento referred to himself as the perfect victim. He suffered, he had the stigmata. That's the physical manifestation of Jesus. I mean, a few, Therese Neumann did. I mean, there are a few of the greats, a number of the great saints did. Okay. He went through an enormous amount of suffering. Now, if you remember in the festival, Swami said, and now that coin has been exchanged for joy. We're moving into Dwapara Yuga. Master was the avatar for this coming age. So that coin has been exchanged for joy. And I have to share just a little story if I can. It's so adorable. Karen, for people who don't know, my wife Karen, has very deep old samskars. So we're at the festival for just about the first time. Swami's doing the festival at Ananda Village for about the first time. And, you know, he gets to this line, and the coin of suffering has been exchanged for joy. And then we go through the whole thing. And at the end, Karen walks up to him and says, really? We have to exchange that coin for joy? And his response was, oh, Karen. Yes! That's what we're trying to do. But at the time, see, in Kali Yuga, it was very important. The world was so gross. I don't mean disgusting, I mean gross material. You know, poverty and dirt and disease and all of that. The world was so gross, you really had to withdraw yourself from that to find God. Our job is to do both. Our job is to be in the world, but also keep it God-centered. In Kali Yuga, the thought was, that was too difficult. So the St. Francis vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience have been changed by Master and Swami. Instead of chastity, it's moderation. Instead of obedience, it's cooperative obedience, which we'll talk about in a minute, because that was also crucial to Padre Pio. And instead of poverty, it's simplicity. Poverty meant you couldn't own anything. For us, it's not about not owning anything. It's about not being attached to anything. You can own a really nice car and a really nice house, but if you think that the car and the house are going to bring you joy, you're in error. So in a way, Lahiri's path, the householder path, is more difficult because you kind of need to play with the stuff. I mean, it's easier to just split and leave town completely and go in the mountains someplace. Then you're not tempted. St. Francis said, very interesting, it is difficult to satisfy necessity without yielding to sensuality. It is difficult to satisfy necessity without yielding to sensuality. And sensuality doesn't mean, you know, partying all the time or sex or anything like that. It just means the more we play with the stuff, remember the fundamental delusion on this level of existence is if I could only get my circumstances just right, then I'd be happy. That's false. And as long as we're playing with this stuff, there's this overwhelming temptation. Think about during the day. I had this insight, I don't know, 6 months or so ago, and it was almost frightening. Think about the amount of consciousness and the amount of time you personally spend every day trying to make your material plane existence marginally better. Think about it. You know, this teacup would be better here than here. I'm a little chilly. This blanket is better than that blanket. I mean, it's really unbelievable. What can I say? I can only speak for myself. It's an enormous part of my consciousness. This is not helpful. So I can really understand. It's not bad, but it's missing the point. Because we really need to learn to be happy in any circumstance. And spending all of your energy making your material plane circumstance marginally better is probably not the right idea. Now, we're human. We do the best we can. Okay? This is what Padre Pio was fighting against. Very strict obedience. Absolutely like this. If it was said, done. He never complained. He never complained. He was tormented by his superiors. Because it was very awkward in the church. They don't know what to do with saints. It's like, what do you do with a saint? I mean, you got a hierarchy, okay? You got, and forgive me, my background's Jewish. I may even screw this up, but I'll do the best I can. Okay, you've got a priest, and then you've got a bishop, and then you have an archbishop, and then you have a cardinal, and then you have the pope. And theoretically, the pope is more, if I can put it this way, more advanced spiritually than the archbishop, or than the cardinal, and the archbishop, and all that. So you got this guy who's a saint. Thousands of people from all over Italy were flocking to San Giovanni Rotondo because they wanted to be with this guy. Well, what do you do with him? That's not right. So the other padres would give mass, and no one showed up. It was kind of awkward. So they kept trying to restrict Padre Pio. I don't know if you know, just as an aside, the adorable story of Ramakrishna. I mean, he was an avatar, one of the great saints in the history, more in our tradition, you know, Indian. And at one point, he just didn't want himself to be that known yet. And the story is said that he started glowing with this beautiful light, and he started going, stop it, get back in there, get back. Isn't that adorable? Now, Padre Pio didn't do that. The church did it for him. So they would sequester him. They forbid him from hearing confession, from giving mass, from speaking to any of his disciples. And it's actually interesting. I'll touch on it. They actually called them disciples. They just kept restricting him. And the other thing that was peculiar is that there'd be this pope. And this pope didn't like him. I mean, the popes couldn't do everything. So they would get input from people. And there were a lot of people around Padre Pio who were jealous. I mean, the padres whose congregations were empty, for example, were not very happy with this guy. So they'd keep sending things to the pope. You know, he's this, he's that, and all kinds of terrible accusations, ridiculous stuff. He's sleeping with women and stealing money and all that's crazy. Anyway, every once in a while, one of the popes would believe all this stuff, or they didn't like him that much either, because it was sort of... Swami said, saints are incredibly inconvenient. It's like, what do you do with them, you know? So there'd be some pope who was in there, and the pope wouldn't like Francis, and he would pass all these rules. And Francis, really, never a word, and more than a word, in his consciousness, you could feel it. It's coming from God, no problem. Every time, no problem. No matter how ridiculous it was, no problem. Then that pope would pass away, as they did. I mean, you don't get to be pope at 25 years old. It actually kind of works out pretty well. So the popes were always pretty old, and they wouldn't be around that long. So the pope would pass away, and then the new pope would come in, and this guy loved Padre Pio. So he'd give him all his things back. Now he can do everything, and he'd, you know, talk about how great he was and more people would flock. Then he would die and the next pope would come and he didn't like him. So it was almost comical. I mean, on one level, you know, forgive me, but if the pope is the word of God, then what this meant was that God was constantly changing his mind. And I personally find that a little hard to believe, but that's sort of how Padre Pio's life worked. So these things were just happening all the time for him. Now let's talk a little bit about this whole notion of obedience, because this is one of the most interesting things for me. This was a real hallmark of Padre Pio's character. Absolute obedience. In fact, one of the miracles about him, he would go into essentially rapture, and it would look like he was in a coma, except he looked gorgeous. And he would be in his cell, and this is one of the miracles and a level of obedience as well. They could not get him out. I mean, they couldn't wake him. He wasn't asleep. He was just like in the astral world. And, you know, they would shake him and yell at him and talk to him and nothing. Just totally blissed out on his cot in his bed. One of his superiors would go out in the hall in the monastery, close the door, and say, "Under the order of obedience, I order you to awaken." And instantly he'd wake up. There is no chance he could have heard that person. The guy was down the hall whispering, but he would say that under order of obedience, and that was the phrase that would be used. And they were careful about that. So they would say, you know, you should do this. That's not an order. Under order of obedience, and then he would always just do it, whatever it was. Talk about saying yes to life. These awful things that would break his heart. He had, it's actually interesting, you know, a lot of the, some of the lingo actually parallels ours. He had what's called the spiritual director. Isn't that fun? The spiritual director, who was essentially the guru. And at one point, the popes got mad at him and they ordered him never to speak to or see his guru again. And he said, no problem, done. And he never saw him again for the rest of his life. Terrible. Yeah, amazing. And no word passed his mind. He really understood. Now let's talk about obedience on our path. And this was part of what was a little interesting to me. Because Master, I mean, I'll say Swami, but Swami didn't do anything that didn't come from Master. So whether Master exactly said it or not, I'm not even certain about obedience. Swami called it cooperative obedience. Did Master use that term? I don't remember. He talked about Lady Simplicity instead of poverty, but I don't remember. But in any event, cooperative obedience. As I read this, I could really get the power of strict obedience. I think that it is better to disciple yourself to a block of wood than to nothing. Because what we're really trying to do, don't really do that, but but what we're really trying to do is we need to get out of our own egos. That's the whole point. And just like I said a few minutes ago, we spend all of our time, as Swami put it, making this mess of pottage, this life we live in, marginally better. You know, this shoe is a little tight. Maybe if I take it to a shoemaker. I mean, you can just spend your whole life doing that. So the whole idea of obedience is it actually doesn't matter what you think. Right? Jesus said in the Bible. I mean, in the Bible, Jesus said, I'm going to go to Jerusalem and they're going to kill me. Now, what would you say to that? How about, like, don't go? So that's what Peter said. It's perfectly straightforward. And Jesus said, get thee behind me, Satan. You're thinking like men think. You're not thinking like God thinks. Well, we're all always thinking, I mean, I shouldn't say that. Way too often. I'll speak for myself again. Almost always, I'm thinking like men think. You know, to really get to the state where you can let that go is something. One of the tools for getting to that state is obedience. Because we need to get out of our own egos. This is why, it was said, say yes. Sister said, say yes and make it snappy. Just say yes. For us, that vow of obedience has been changed to cooperative obedience, which is more appropriate for Dwapara Yuga. Because for us, it's not just about saying yes. See, if Master said, take this light bulb and, you know, just plug it into the mashed potatoes. All right? You can say, sure, no problem. And you just do it. But you haven't actually learned anything. Cooperative obedience means you're really trying to get in there. You're getting in there. Obedience is still right, but it's cooperative. We're kind of doing it together. So you want to take what your superior says deeply, deeply seriously, but you don't want to just salute and do it because you haven't really engaged with it. Getting your physical body to put the light bulb in the potatoes is great, but like, who cares? This is about working on our consciousness, and through cooperation, we work on our consciousness more. I'll share a little story. Many years ago when I was at the Village, I was working for what was called JAPA at the time. It was sort of fun. Joyful Arts Production Association. JAPA. Isn't that cute? It's now Crystal Clarity Publishing. So I was working for JAPA, and Padma, who's now the spiritual director in Seattle, was running JAPA. And she came up to me at one point. This was shortly after Swami wrote the Oratorio. So it must have been 84, 5, something like that, about that time. And Swami really wanted people to bring the Oratorio out. So the obvious idea was, let's bring it out to the Christian churches. We can show it. They can hear my music. There was a slideshow that was created by Swami for the Oratorio. It was actually quite beautiful. So while the songs were playing, you saw appropriate slides. And so it was this whole production. The slideshow was synced to the music and all of that. So Padma came up to me at one point and said, David, a few people were doing this. I would like you to go back to the East Coast, where I'm originally from. I want you to go back to the East Coast, and I want you to spend a month or two back there booking and showing the Oratorio. So go to the Catholic church or whatever the church was, talk to the minister, get it booked, and then do the narration and sort of all this stuff. Now, there are a lot of things wrong with this story. One, I hate driving. Karen does all the driving. Two, I don't want to go back to the East Coast. I got too many samskars back there. Three, I'm Jewish, for crying out loud. I've never been in a church. I don't even know what to call these people. I mean, is Jewish Hindus going to come in and tell them you should show this slide? The whole thing was ridiculous. Four, I don't want to spend 2 months away from Karen. I mean, you know, we're like this. I never do that. But I've been asked. So I didn't say no. I went deep inside. I said, let me get back to you. It's always a good thing to do. Whenever someone says something that's a real challenge, don't say yes or no. Just say, let me get back to you on that. I've learned this over the years. I get in trouble when I open my mouth too fast. So I really worked on it for a couple days, and I really got to a point where I could say yes. I knew it was going to be a big challenge, but I thought, look, Master wants me to do this. He is so much smarter than I am. So many huge challenges have come to me in my life. My near-fatal brain tumor, losing $2 million in the stock market. They've all turned out to be incredible blessings. I'm going to do this. I don't understand it. I'm probably not going to like it at first, but I'm going to do this. So I went back to Padma and I said, let's do it. And she said, great. And I left. I was meditating that night and just sort of sitting, and I got, no. Yeah, I was completely surprised. And I, you know, and then you just try and get calm again, and I got, nope, not for you. And I thought, okay. And I don't think, I mean, you have to be careful with this stuff. I was always touched. And even Swami, with his own intuition and guidance, was so careful. This is very tricky stuff. But it really felt right to me. So I went back to Padma the next morning. I said, Padma, I don't think I'm supposed to do this. And she said, oh, okay, we'll find someone else. Wow. Yeah, wow, interesting, huh? The whole test for me was to get into it. Doing it, it doesn't really matter what your body does. Everything we do is about consciousness. That's why in this age, literal physical obedience is actually not even relevant. It's this. Now, it is appropriate for us to train ourselves to say yes. That is entirely appropriate. The harder thing, the trickier thing, is like I said before about Lahiri. The householder path is, in a sense, the harder path because you're mixed up in the middle of it and you're still trying to get it right. The harder thing to do is to say no with a yes heart, to say no with good energy. It's easy to just say yes. Padma asked me, I said, yes, I'll go. I haven't really engaged with it or learned anything, but yes, I'll go. The harder thing is to really get in there with a totally open heart and say, Lord, what do you want me to do? And if the answer is no, that's fine. But you're saying it in an embracing way, not a contractive way. It's the contraction that's the problem. And we train ourselves by saying yes to learn to not contract. So again, it's tricky. in Kali Yuga, where Padre Pio was at, that was not his model. And this is part of what I was thinking about this week as I was reading the book and trying to get into it. And I kept a little bit in my own heart resisting it. It didn't feel right to me. And then I realized, ah, that wasn't Master's way. That's why I was resisting it, just holding it a little bit off. I was picturing myself in Padre Pio's place, and it never quite felt right, because I don't really think that's what we're supposed to do. Nonetheless, every saint is a reflection of God. Every saint is a reflection of God in another character. Just like all the Hindu, you know, the huge spectrum of saints, the Westerners are confused, and they think that there's all these gods. There's one God. Each Hindu saint is a different aspect of that one God. I mean, look, I am a husband, a corporate trainer, a Jew, I'm a man. Are there four Davids? No, there's one David. It's just different aspects. Karen knows me as a husband. You guys know me as, well, I don't want to think about that. But anyway, you get the idea, okay? All right. So each saint represents a slightly different vibration of God. And it's our job, which we've done in this room, of course, but it's our job as people incarnated on this planet to find the vibration that's yours. And so on a certain level, it was a little easier for me to speak about Ma than it is Padre Pio. It was a little more challenging to get into it because it's really not my flavor. It's not to say it's better or worse. It's kind of like asking, which is a better medication? Which is a better medication, penicillin or aspirin? It's kind of a dumb question. It kind of depends what you have. If you have bronchitis, you might want penicillin. If you have a headache, you might want aspirin. So it depends what you have. Well, we're all incarnated because we're all crazy in one way or another. So what is our disease? For me, the cure for what ails me is Master. And for other people, it's some other saint. So it doesn't make any sense to talk about one being better than another, but we need to find what's ours. Because human consciousness is so complex and tangled. It's a little bit why psychiatry doesn't work. I mean, it works for a narrow thing. Let's put it this way. Psychiatry is not a way to lead a life. You can't lead a better life through figuring out all the little knots in your consciousness and undoing them one at a time. It doesn't work. It's like trying to clean a beach by picking up a grain of sand and polishing it and putting it down. Then you pick up the next grain of sand. I mean, you know, you'll be doing that forever. And by the time you make any progress, the first grain is dirty again. So we need to find the path that's ours. And then through practices like Kriya, it just clears the whole thing. So every saint is a different reflection of God. And in this case, for me, reading about Padre Pio was just very interesting because it's such a different flavor than ours. But it got me, sometimes like Swami talks about shadows on a statue, you can't see the light on the statue without the shadow on the statue. So because that's the nature of duality, you can't have music without silence. Because without the silence, you can't hear the note. So tuning into Padre Pio brought in good highlight for me, and in relief, in a sense, a lot of aspects about our path. And this thing about obedience was one of them that I just found very interesting. For him, absolutely strict. Yes, sir, done. Not a word out of his mouth, and it was a lovely practice. And nothing in his heart. See, that's the thing. It wasn't like, okay, like that. It was just, if I'm being asked, it's truly from God. And if anyone else made even a comment in his presence about, you know, this isn't fair to you, he'd say, get thee behind me, Satan. He just didn't want to go there. So any questions or other thoughts about that? Does that sort of make sense? See, again, same kind of thing. Other boys would tease him and they would make up stories. A lot of people were jealous of him. I mean, you know, look, we're on this planet. And there you have it. People get jealous. They want attention themselves, whatever it happens to be. We're all looking for happiness. Absolutely universal. Every human being is looking for happiness. We just do it in ways that are crazy. It's a problem, okay? So jealousy is one of those things. You know, cutting the heads off other people so that you feel taller is not appropriate, but it is also, unfortunately, not uncommon. So the boys he was with would often tease him. He was always in ecstasy and these various things, and they would make fun of him, and they would make up stories. They made up a story that actually brought some problems to him about how he was sleeping with one of the local girls. He didn't say a word. He didn't deny it. He didn't respond to it. They sanctioned him for it. He said, okay. Then later it came out. And Swami's done things like this. Through the lawsuit, there were many times Swami said, I will not apologize. I am doing the best I can. I am serving God. I will not apologize. I will not explain myself. It's between me and Master. And I saw a lot of that in Pio. And it was actually a little helpful for me. You know, because on this planet, I mean, I went through all of that, and I was always wanting Swami to, you know, do it. Let me read. I have a bunch of these things bookmarked. I can't say that this book is that great, so don't bother asking for the name, but it was interesting, and there's a lot of stuff in here. It's the book we happen to have at home. Let's see. Okay. There was a great emphasis on the practice of meditation, specifically the practice of withdrawing one's attention from the material world and focusing one's mind and soul on God. That sounds fairly familiar. I like that. So-and-so, this a British writer on mysticism, a contemporary of Padre Pio, called it a stilling of the surface of the mind, a calling in all of our scattered interest, an entire giving of ourselves to this one activity without self-consciousness. The novices were taught to concentrate their psychic energies on one aspect of divine reality, such as one of the names or attributes of God. I mean, this is like, you know, Patanjali wrote this, a passage of scripture or an event in the life of Christ. In doing so, as Miss Underhill wrote, the soul of the meditator falls gradually and insensibly into the condition of reverie, and protected by this holy daydream from the more distracting dream of life, sinks into itself and becomes the language of asceticism, recollected or gathered together. Pretty darn good. Now forgive me for being slightly chauvinistic, but I am Master's child. The only way that they screw this up is that they talk about Christian meditation. And the Catholic Church has put out stuff much more recently about make sure you don't do any of that New Age kind of meditation. They want you to focus just on Jesus. And, you know, so that whole thread is still in there. But I think that that is a fantastic description of what we do. Withdrawing from the senses, focusing on an aspect of God, for us, light, sound. I mean, it's perfect. And there's a story that's told at Ananda. I think Swami told the story. I don't know where it's from. But someone went to Padre Pio. Remember, Padre Pio died in the 60s. This is not that long ago. Someone went to Padre Pio for a confession and said that he was doing Kriya. And Padre Pio's response, it is told me, Padre Pio's response was, shh, you're doing the right thing, but don't tell anyone. It was a Catholic who went in there for that. Okay, so this is what we're doing. So again, I mean, the heart of it is exactly what we're doing. God comes first. The strict obedience and accepting punishment and stigmata and stuff is not so much a vibration, but it's a cousin. It's a different way because it's a different time and it's a slightly different path. But I found, I mean, that when I read that on meditation, I thought, wow, that's great, actually. That was really nicely written. So he had all sorts of things. He would have three types of visions. He would have bodily visions where it was like, hi, Jesus, how are you? Right there, okay, in the body. Then he would have visions that were sort of allegorical where like he would imagine a golden palace and you know what I mean? It was more allegory than a literal vision. And then he would have what he called intellectual visions, which I don't think is quite the right word given our context. It was more insight visions. So he would come to have an insight about something, which isn't really a picture allegory and it's not a physical vision. So he had three kinds of visions and he had them all the time. Just all the time. He was always just like chatting with Jesus in his cell and, you know, must have been kind of neat. Unfortunately, the other kind of thing that would happen to him is he did physical hand-to-hand combat with the devil. Yeah, it was weird. He'd come out in the morning. The monks, the other mendicants, the other monks would hear fighting in his cell. Now, unless he thought he was really nuts and was punching himself in the face, which is highly unlikely. He was doing battle in there, and he'd come out, and like his lip was bloody, and he'd have a black eye and stuff. I mean, it was pretty weird stuff. But, you know, again, not our path, but worth noting. So his spiritual director was a man named Padre Benedetto, who was a great mystic, And it was wonderful that that turned out to be his guru, his spiritual director, because the man was truly a mystic and really could relate to him in that way. For a lot of other people, this was just too weird, which I can understand. They just couldn't relate to it. Benedetto was also incredibly severe. Picture a Catholic Yukteswar. So it kind of fit, because Padre Pio himself was fairly severe. In his presence, he was incredibly joyful and just like this. But in his heart, very severe, and he struggled pretty much his whole life with the dark night of the soul. He felt deeply, deeply unworthy in the face of God. And on a certain level, it was sad, but it brought him tremendous humility. And it was genuine humility. You know, Swami talks about self-effacing, like, oh, I'm nothing, you know. Forgive me, there's that great joke that Swami used to tell. It was a Jewish temple, and there was the rabbi and the cantor. The cantor is the one who leads the chanting, the rabbi and the cantor. And the rabbi walks in before the Torah and says, oh, I am nothing, and then walks out. And then the cantor walks in and goes, oh, I am nothing. Well, the janitor in the temple sort of sees them doing this and thinks, okay. So the janitor goes before the Torah, I am nothing. And the rabbi turns to the cantor and says, look who thinks he's nothing. Swami really liked that story. Look who thinks he's nothing. Not that kind of humility. Padre Pio had genuine humility. He wasn't, I am the most humble and it's my best quality. That's a little odd. So it was quite genuine, but it was really the dark night of the soul, and he wrote these passages that really kind of made me sad. He was afraid. He both wanted to die because he wanted to get to heaven. And, you know, there's no reincarnation. So he figures, if I can just die, then I'll get there and I'll be there forever. But he was terrified that he wasn't good enough to get to heaven. So he was afraid to die. So there was this constant battle in his heart. In fact, he said something, Swami said a great thing years ago, many years ago, that the heart, I think it was his heart doctor, said to him, you know, Swami, I think the doctor called him Swami, your heart is in very serious shape. Very serious shape, you know. I'm not sure you're going to make it through this year. And Swami's response was, promises, promises. So Padre Pio was kind of in that place too, and he had some writing where he was very, very sick, and he said things like, unfortunately, I pulled through. But at the same time, he had this fear. He had this fear that he was going to die and not go to heaven, and that, of course, would be awful. So this very deep sense of humility. Now, at one point, he talked about he was ready to die and he was ready to leave this exile on earth, and he considered it to be an exile because it was away from Jesus. Now, again, he communed with Jesus constantly, but his picture was clearly, you know, being in heaven was better. Okay, so he was afraid to die, but at the same time, and I'll read this little bit here. Funny, I kept finding other passages. So I have these noted 1, 2, 3, 4, and then there's 1.5, 1.75, 1.92, you know. But anyway, let's see. Oh, I don't need that. So 1.5. Pio was also terrified, as we have seen, by the thought of being punished by God for sins unknown to him. He was forever afraid of being condemned for the sins of his secular life, which he didn't lead. But, you know, all of this anguish contributed immeasurably to his physical problems. He was so sick all the time. Pneumonia and bad legs and sight and headaches and aches and pains and fevers. I mean, the long list. You know, Swami had a lot of stuff. This guy made Swami look like a novice at being sick. Many years later, in 1939, Padre Pio commented to Padre Agostino, his closest friend, "My illness in youth stemmed from this spiritual oppression." That's what he called it. He was so, Swami talked about, you remember that section in The Path where Swami was trying to get everything right? You know, and he thought, does Master want me to do this? Does Master want me to do this? What about this? Can I tie my shoe? Can I take a drink of water? And Master's comment when he saw Swami one day was, oh, poor Walter. That's what he always called him. Poor Walter. He's so confused. It obviously occurred to me. I mean, Padre Pio was this great saint, and he was just so angst-ridden. But on the other hand, it brought him this incredible sense of obedience and humility. You know, who am I to know? But for our path, it seemed a little tight. Anyway, I thought that... Well, there was an element of that. She was saying, work out the karma of his disciples. There certainly was an element of that. There's no question there was an element of that. But this is his own self-doubt. The illness I can get, but feeling like he... I mean, he would say things like, you know, I'm such a wretch. And I think, no, you're not. You know, and everyone around him would tell him that. But this was just a deep part of his character. Now, I found that sort of interesting.
Saying I'm such a wretch, isn't that sort of a Catholic sort of...
Well, it is a Catholic sort of thing. But at the same time, I mean, he had divine sight into other people. In fact, he wrote at one point, I can't imagine counseling someone. I would never say something to someone unless I had divine sight as to what God wanted them to do. And he counseled constantly, which kind of tells you he was pretty good at this. I mean, you know, thousands of people, all right? So he was very good at that. But it seemed like, and this happened with people even in his family, his prayers were always answered. If he prayed for you, it was because he thought God wanted him to pray for you, and you were healed, except for his family and close friends. Interesting. I just thought that was very interesting. Somehow that, you know, again, I mean, what do I know? But there was just something in there about it was this thing that he had to go through, and it was just part of his sadhana. And I just found it intriguing. I have no particular insight or comment on that. Please. I think that's very fair. At the same time, I would be hard-pressed to think on some level, I don't know what to do with this, that he really believed he wouldn't make it into heaven. I mean, let's put it this way. If he's not making it into heaven, we're in big trouble. All right, I'm going to come back like as a sea slug or a worm or something. All right, so fair enough. I mean, I agree with what you're saying, so I could understand that in his own heart. And, you know, we have a tough thing we're doing here. I mean, we're trying to be perfect. So generally speaking, we're probably going to fall short, and we need to find the space in ourselves where we don't beat ourselves up about that. So it's to see the mountaintop but not get weird about it at the same time. So it's a tricky dance, and you know, all I can say, I appreciate what you're saying and I think it's correct, but for me, some of his writing was just felt a little, I don't want to go there. You know, I don't want to go around saying I'm such a wretch. It's not our way, anyway, but it was part of his character, and I can see it, and this is what I meant about there's penicillin, there's aspirin, there are all these different things. We have to find what's ours. Our coin has been exchanged for joy, and Swami talked about magnetizing us from here rather than pushing us from here, and this felt a little more Kali Yuga oriented is sort of the best way to put it. Yeah, it was the time. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know. I don't know that anyone on our path has ever said that, but it's possible, certainly. I mean, he was a disciple of St. Francis. I mean, that was his model. It was a Franciscan order. Absolutely. But I'll comment on something else that you said. I mean, for me, and maybe this is a little personal, but I think it's general, we have to be a little careful when we're reading things outside of our lineage, and we really have to hold on to Master. I'll briefly share a story I've shared with a few people, but I think it's interesting. There's a book called The Miracle of Love about Ram Dass's guru, not yours. It's not about Master. It's about the American Ram Dass, Neem Karoli Baba, and it's a wonderful book, and it's like yay thick. And I read that book, and I loved it because he's really a cousin. I mean, he is a yogi. He's a Hindu. I mean, he's really a cousin. I finished the book, and I really felt out of tune. And this was 20 years ago, 25 years ago. So this was a while ago. But I've been around for 10 years. And I just didn't feel Master's presence, and I didn't like it. And I was spiritually confused. So what I'll say is, if you want to read things of other paths, and I don't anymore, generally speaking, but if you want to, I think that that's fine. But make sure that you're really anchored in Master while you're reading. Don't get lost in what you're reading. It's like if you want to learn to sing, don't have two voice teachers. pick a voice teacher, because you can't do it that way, because everybody's different. It's not that one's better than the other. I'm not saying that. But we're master's children. So for myself, while I was reading this, I found it very interesting, and parts were very inspiring, but I made sure that I was in master's vibration while I was doing it, so from here. And it was interesting. So I can relate to what you're saying. I mean, you read these things and get lost in them, and it's not us. Right. It was more, I think that's right. It was more just aspects. He used to beat himself till he bled. And, you know, that's sort of not us. So overall, I agree with what you're saying, but I just found myself, I needed to just stay in master's vibration while I was reading it. And then I found parts that were very inspiring. That section on meditation, really, it really felt like master could have read that. You know, let go of the senses, focus on an aspect of God. I mean, that's master's writing. And as you said, St. Francis is in our lineage according to master. So all of that is appropriate.
Yeah,
Lenny? Oh, you've been there too? Yeah, it was great there. It took me a little while because I wasn't used to being in a modern pilgrimage place. I mean, stuff was like from the 60s. And at first my mind was just kind of like, forgive me, this is adorable. I went to Swarthmore College, which is right next to Haverford College. It's like Harvard and Radcliffe, they're right next to each other. When I read The Path, I learned Swami went to Haverford College. And I thought, oh, then he can't be worth anything. He went to Haverford. It's like across the street, right? But you see what I mean? So I got to San Giovanni and things were built like in 1970. And it was, well, this can't be anything. So it took me a while to sort of vibrationally excavate and get down there. And then it was like, wow, this guy was a deep soul. But it caught me by surprise a little bit. But yeah, San Giovanni was great. And thank you. I had forgotten that. I remember that hall. It's a long hallway with all the things that happened to St. Francis and all the things that happened to Padre Pio right down the hall. And they're just parallel. Yeah, it's fantastic. So I guess all I'd say, and I try and do this all the time in my life. Whatever you're doing, hold on to Master's ankles. You know, part of the dark night of the soul, I mean, a part of it in a sense, is the death of the ego. And that's terrifying. Even Lahiri, I mean, this always made me open my eyes. Even Lahiri, when he was told it was about his time to die was coming, he shuddered. Even Lahiri shuddered. Well, like, what hope do I have? You know, now I don't want to, you know what I mean. I mean, if even Lahiri shuddered, this is tough here. You remember what Asha said in the movie about Paula, a beautiful Ananda woman from years ago who passed away. Paula said, this is very hard. You're going to have to help me. So we're here. We're not here by accident. We're stuck here. And this is tough for us. And, you know, things happen. I always envision, it's kind of like you have two cliffs and you have two vines hanging down. And you need to swing from this one to this one. But the vines don't reach all the way. So you swing and you let go of this vine and you're in midair reaching for this vine and you're not anywhere yet. And that moment where you're in the middle is terrifying. But if you have enough confidence, you understand you'll get there. I mean, you'll reach it. But while you're in the middle, it's very scary. And it's that middle part where we're trying to let the ego go. And that's what we identify with. So it's a death experience. You know, when I became a vegetarian, you know, a very long time ago, there were very few vegetarians. And people would say to me, what do you eat? And what they pictured was a plate of meat and potatoes and vegetables without the meat. And they thought, well, that doesn't work. Well, that's that's because they didn't get the picture. So we don't have the picture of what it's like to let go. All we know is the terror part. So it's very hard. And a lot of the tapasya and pain that the saints go through, I think, is just, and a lot of it is evidence for us. You know, a lot of what Master went through in his life was for our sake. He didn't need it. You know, there's that story where Master is meditating in a group meditation and says, what's that, Divine Mother? What did you say? Did you say that the material thoughts of the people in this room are driving you out of the room? Like he needed to say that to Divine Mother? He said that for us. So a lot of these things that happen are for us, and we get to see it, and that's the model so that we can understand, you know, what we need to do. Well, let me move on a little bit. There was another... Again, you're talking about withdrawing from the world. And this, again, is more than we do, but I thought it was just beautifully written and insightful. This is Padre Pio's writing. Most of the time, it gives me great pain to talk to anyone except those of whom God speaks to me. Because of this, I am a great lover of solitude. When I am passing the time of day and conversations are prolonged, I cannot decently get away, I force myself to remain with the greatest of effort, since these conversations give me great pain. Isn't that interesting? Powerful stuff. I mean, this is a great saint. Our motivation to find God, like a drowning man wants breath. When he was engaged in idle conversation, he felt like he was not communing with Jesus, and it was painful. It was painful. And when we get to the point like a drowning man wants breath, it's all you think about. Swami said, if you're not with your beloved, you're thinking about him all the time. And we're not. I'm not. I assume most of us aren't. If anyone in here is an avatar, please tell me, because I'm embarrassing myself up here. But most of us are in the same boat. We're doing the best we can with that. But to read something like that, I found just incredibly inspiring. Just interesting. How are we doing? Should we take a break? Well, actually, we're almost done. So I think, if you need to use a restroom or something, please feel free. But I think we're doing good. He actually had a small stint in the army, believe it or not. He was drafted in World War I, and he was very sick, so they sent him home, and then they brought him back, and he could never live at the friary. Whenever he was living at the friary, he would get almost deathly ill, so they'd send him home to Petrolchina, his hometown, and he'd be better there. And then he'd get better, and they'd bring him back to the friary, and he'd get really sick again. So it wasn't until much later in life that he could actually live in the friary. And meanwhile, people were castigating him for that, and the popes were sanctioning him for this and that because he wasn't at the friary. His life was a real mess. here's another sentence about meditation I thought was just great. Through the study of books, one seeks God. By meditation, one finds him. Isn't that nice? So from 1921 to 1922, the church forbade Padre Pio from doing anything. He couldn't show the stigmata. He always wore gloves. He wasn't allowed to show the stigmata. He was not allowed to give mass. They just stopped him from doing anything. Then in 1933, things changed. I think one of the popes died, and a new pope came in, and this new pope liked him again, so he could do all this stuff again. I mean, his life was just completely crazy. Then in 1940, he started plans to build a hospital. He had divine guidance to build a hospital. And the hospital that didn't get completed till 1956 is an incredible edifice. Karen and I were there. I mean, it is gorgeous. It's not hospital white. They're beautiful colors. He made sure that there were little, what would you call it? Electrical outlets for headphones so you could listen to music while you were in the hospital. It was subsidized so that the hospital stay per night, and this is like in 1970, this is in 1820, was $14 a night. He wanted to subsidize it for the poor. Beautiful state-of-the-art facility. And that, remember, the mendicants were there to serve. The monks were completely withdrawn from society. The mendicants, part of their thing was to serve society, and this is one of the ways that he chose to be of service. I mentioned before that he was constantly having visions. You know, angels would come to him, and the devil would come to him, and sometimes the devil would sort of come as a saint and try and get him in trouble. So the devil would appear to him as the Pope, for example. And Padre Pio got very clever. He would say to the Pope, because, you know, I mean, this was a visual vision. It's like the guy standing in front of him. And he would say to the angel or the Pope that appeared, please say, praise be unto Jesus. And the devils would never say it. Isn't that adorable? They would say, I don't need to say that. And they'd say, yes, you do. And say, well, I'm not going to say that. And then he'd know it was phony. But if the vision said, praise be unto Jesus, then he knew it was really the Archangel Michael was his patron saint. Then he knew it was really Michael. And I thought that was just so adorable. That's pretty clever. Nice. No wonder, Lord, you have so few, right? You remember the line, no wonder, Lord, you have so few friends. Then, let's see. He said at one point, to someone who had sought counsel, and he just wasn't feeling, and he said, it would be stupid for me, that was the word he used, it would be stupid for me to counsel you without knowing God's plan for you. I would like it if I had that level of confidence when I was counseling people. I think that would be pretty cool. We do the best we can, but that was, I think, pretty striking. Now let me read one other thing in here. Okay, now almost all of this, again, Swami could have written this. These were Padre, someone at one point asked Padre Pio for his personal rules. So this wasn't the Franciscan rules necessarily, but they're obviously related, but just this is what he said. Never be pleased with yourself. Do not complain about offenses perpetrated against you. Forgive everyone with Christian charity. Now this one, always groan as a poor wretch before your God. Okay. Never marvel at your weakness, but recognizing yourself for what you are, blush over your inconstancy and in faithlessness to God, and confide in him, tranquilly abandoning yourself to the arms of the Heavenly Father like a babe in the arms of the mother. Now that's actually a lot closer to where we're at. Swami talked about humility is self-honesty. If you're really honest, really honest, we're just all doing the best we can. I mean, this planet is essentially a mental hospital. It's a school in a mental hospital. And don't kid yourself. You know, Master said we're all crazy. You just hang around with other people who are crazy like you are, and then you think you're normal. But we're all crazy. And that's not said in a critical way. I mean, it's just self-honesty. We have these drives. We're driven by our subconscious. You know, myself, I mean, I can get annoyed with stuff, and I'm intense. And why? I have no idea. Some scar from something. I don't know. I know it's nuts, but as long as it has me by the throat, there it is. So, you know, what's to be humble or not humble? I mean, it's just how God made me. And if he doesn't like it, he can fix it because I'm sort of doing what I can. But you see what I mean? So that's really what he's saying here. And when he says poor wretch, he's just acknowledging the flaws he has. The poor wretch, to my ear at least, I never spoke to him, I don't know, feels critical. And that's the part that's a little uncomfortable. But the rest of it is just true. Never exalt in any way in any virtues, but ascribe everything to God and give him all the glory and honor. Absolutely true. You know, as crazy as I am in my own ways, I was born with a bunch of material plane skills. So I'm able to do a lot of stuff. I've started businesses and all the material plane stuff I do works. I can't take credit for that. I was like that when I was an embryo. What did I do? I always laugh when someone says, oh, you know, I've heard people, other people, someone will say, oh, you're nice and tall. And the other person says, thanks. What does that even mean? Thanks? Or you're very handsome. Oh, thank you. I mean, like you did it? But it's kind of weird. But all of our qualities are that way, aren't they? I mean, there's some things I've put some effort into. I've gotten marginally better at a few things. Great. And that's good. And, you know, I'm working at that, and that's terrific. But a lot of this stuff you're just kind of born with. How can you possibly take credit for that? It's crazy. Thank you for telling me that I'm tall. Anyway, what can I tell you? We're all crazy, as I said. So just another little miracle. I mean, some of these things are fun. In the friary, a boy occurred to him in a vision. And he asked the boy how he had died. It was someone who clearly passed away. And the boy told him that before the friary was a friary, it was a poorhouse, and he died in the poorhouse. And Padre Pio shared this with someone else, and that person went and got the records. Everything was true. All the details, the guy's name, the kid's name, when he died, all of that was in the town records. So, you know, how do you know stuff like that? And he would say things, I mean, in the friary, he was very sick and couldn't get out of bed, and he asked one of the other padres to pray for him. The padre went downstairs. I mean, I have this experience all the time. By the time he got downstairs, he'd forgotten. And so he went and did his spiritual practices and hadn't prayed. And then he went back up to see Padre Pio because, you know, he just didn't care for him. And Padre Pio says, did you pray for me? And the father said, oh, yes, I did. And he said, you did not? Okay. Good. I mean, it makes you kind of wonder. I mean, you remember Swami said, Master knew every thought you had. I don't know. I mean, you know, we used to think at the village, oh, it would have been so great to have been alive at the time and to have lived with Master. And at one point, you know, everybody was always saying that in the early days. And at one point, Swami said to a whole group of people, don't kid yourself, none of you could have handled it. Okay, I felt duly chastised. He's probably right. I think we're incarnated when we are, and God is pretty smart and knows what he's doing. So that's pretty, I mean, you know, to have someone who knows everything you're thinking, I think would have been slightly intimidating. Let's see. What other things do I want to share here? Oh, this one was also interesting. Again, the parallels between, because, you know, a mystic is a mystic. I mean, a mystic is someone who has inner sight of God. And God is God. You know, so for him, it appeared as Jesus. For me, it's Master. For someone else, it's the Buddha. It doesn't matter. But the mystical experience is that experience through that sixth sense. So all mystics are cousins. You know, some speak Greek, some speak Latin, some speak another language. It doesn't really matter. But we're all cousins. So this was a nice passage. As he kissed Padre Pio's hand, this person smelled the strong perfume which emanated from his stigmata. Now, it's very interesting. Many saints exude a perfume. There was the perfume saint in the AY. And his stigmata, there was a particular scent that was associated with Padre Pio. And it was extremely interesting. And people would know that he was there by the scent, that his presence was there. And people who didn't know who he was would talk about, they were praying and they had this scent in the room. And they would describe the scent and it was always the same description. It's very interesting. Leaving his presence, he concluded, I found myself faced with the divine ego. In Pio alone, I found no trace of the human ego. Other spiritual teachers, he was convinced, were men more or less imbued with the divine, while he, on the other hand, is nothing but an instrument of divine. He had reached the goal of total union. Union in Sanskrit is called yoga. Yoga is just the word union in a foreign language. That's what we're talking about. And it's exactly, I mean, you know, this and the meditation reading, excuse me, it's the same mystical experience that we all quest for and that when we're blessed, we have. It's exactly the same thing. It's through a completely different channel. And as I said before, it's not my personal channel, but it gets to exactly the same spot. Whether you take 101 or 280, you wind up in San Francisco. And that's where we're trying to get to, and he was there. And that's why thousands of people would leave their local parish and go to be with Padre Pio. And as Swami said often, the saints were very inconvenient because it kind of mucked up all these rules that we had. Okay, so then in 1939, Pius XI died, Pius XII came into power. All of a sudden, Padre Pio was a great hero again. So his persecution ratcheted down a few notches and all of that. It was at that time that he met a doctor, just a medical doctor, went to him, and Padre Pio, upon meeting him, said, you will come build my hospital. And the doctor said, what? He said, I'm just a doctor. And he said, you will build my hospital. This is hilarious. A month later, he won the lottery. I mean, give me a break. Literally, a month later, he won the lottery. So he had all this money, and it was a very sweet story. Padre Pio gave him a coin. That coin was given to him by a destitute woman, totally destitute woman. She said, all I can give you is this one coin. And Pio said, I can't take that coin from you. And they fought about it. And finally, the woman said, you must take this coin from me. And he took it. And it was very sweet. He kept that coin in his habit, pinned near his heart, for years. And then he gave that coin to the doctor and said, I want this to be the first donation for this new hospital, to sort of spiritualize. A very sweet story. And the doctor took it. And it's this incredible, stunning hospital there. A great work. And then that pope died. Pio requested that he be released from his vow of poverty so that he could administer the funds. The vow of poverty was very strict. You're not allowed to handle money. You're not allowed to deal with money. It's not just owning it. So he asked the pope, can I be released from my vow of poverty so that I can administer the funds for this hospital? And the pope said, sure. So that pope died. I mean, these popes are always dying. That pope died, and the new pope came in and accused Pio of embezzling funds. Great. It's like, give me a break. So then he went through another round of persecution, and they accused him of sleeping with women again and embezzling funds and all this stuff. I mean, you know, this is not our home here, guys. We need to get out of here. This is crazy down here. Let's see. So meanwhile, Padre Pio's fame was spreading all over the place, and he was getting thousands of letters, and people were coming from all over the world. And there was a group, it was adorable actually, there was a group called the Pious Ladies. And it was this group of ladies that was always coming to see Padre Pio. And really what they were was groupies. Pious was sort of like tongue-in-cheek. And they were always trying to rip off pieces of his clothing, and they would fight. They would have fights with each other to get the seat closest to him and stuff. I mean, it was just groupies, essentially. And so the church wasn't happy about all of this. I mean, the whole place was turning into a carnival. So then they had to start issuing tickets for Mass. You'd have to get a ticket. And people started forging tickets and wrestling with tickets. And there was a black market in tickets to go to Padre Pio's Mass. I mean, it was a mess. So a little bit I could kind of understand why the church was like, this guy is a pain. But he was this great saint. And so, you know, all these stories were coming up around him. But this stuff always happens. There were rumors. There were rumors about Master. You know, people in the LA Times wrote an article about how Master had a harem and stuff. I mean, it's crazy stuff. But people get jealous and they can't handle the light. And this stuff happens. So his whole life was just really filled with this. Now, he also had a sense of humor. I mean, it's interesting. He was very severe, but he had a sense of humor, you know. If I may, I mean, some portrayals of Master, I'll be as diplomatic as possible here. Some portrayals of Master are very severe. It's like, I command that you do. And Master had an incredible sense of humor, and so did Padre Pio. You know, it was a standard practice often in a Capuchin friary that they would have skulls around. And what that was for was to remind you of the impermanence of life. And it's sort of the, you know, you walk in, there's a skull, and you go, oh, okay, right? And you kind of remember how impermanent things are. So one of the monks who had a slightly nervous disposition is walking in, and it's pretty dark. I mean, you know, these places didn't have halogen lighting and stuff. So the monk is walking through. Padre Pio hides under the table that has a thing. And the monk is walking through, and Padre Pio goes, I see you there, like this. And the monk just goes ballistic and starts screaming and running away. And Padre Pio says, it was just me, it was just me. So, you know, he was a practical joker. I mean, he liked to do stuff like that. It's nice to hear those stories. I mean, you don't want to get these narrow visions. And it's so important that all the different disciples write about Master. Because you don't want to get this sanitized version. It makes him so other. And when your guru is so other, it feels inaccessible. And Jesus said, everything I have done, you're going to do, and greater. Well, if that's true, then we need to feel that those great saints are accessible to us. They're not some other planet. Remember that disciple? Master said something, and the disciple said, well, you can do that. You're a master. And Master said, how do you think I became a master? This is a continuum. There's no break point. This is a continuum. We need to get there. So we need to find these people as accessible. And I like those stories of practical jokes and things like that, because it just kind of gets us. Some woman came to him once, and the woman was very proud of her looks and sort of how she was. And she came to Padre Pio and said, I'm already 60. And he could feel she was disappointed. I'm already 60. What can you tell me to comfort me? And he leaned over and said, death is near. I just love that. I mean, you know, I like that one. I mean, that's just great. She was like, oh, wow. Then I want to read one more little quote. On humility. One sign of Padre Pio's Christian holiness was his modesty. He did not like to be praised for his goodness. You are all so mistaken, he would say. It is you who are good, not I. God made all things. His creation includes the stars and the humblest domestic utensils. I belong in the second category. It's very sweet. It's very sweet. See, something like that, he's not talking about being a wretch, but just, I'm just a utensil. God, do with this body. Remember they called Lahiri God's kitten? You know, when the mama picks up the kitten by the back of the neck, the kitten's, that was Padre Pio. Always yes, never, never a complaint. Perfect obedience. He was just whatever God wants to do with this body. And for me, I found that really just deeply inspiring. So it's about 9. Let me just ask if anything that we've talked about tonight, any questions about anything or other comments about anything? You're at San Giovanni, you mean? Yeah. Yeah, he's buried. He is buried there. Yeah, I mean, where the saints are, he was just an incredible soul. An incredible soul. And a modern saint. You know, again, I'm so used to them being so long ago, but the ones who are here for us,